Members of the jury, you all know, no doubt, very relieved indeed that we can see the light at the end of the tunnel in this case. We've now reached the closing stages of this trial. And my concern at this stage is to let you know how it is that the Crown puts its case on these three charges. And I can tell you that I propose to get straight down to business there in a minute or two and to discuss the charges and the background for the charges and to concentrate on the charges. Because when all's said and done, that's what you must do in this case. That is, concentrate on the charges and return verdicts in respect of them. There may be things, there may be many things, that I shall not even mention. This is not a competition as to who can think of the most points. It's an exercise, members of the jury, designed to enable you to arrive at the truth as to what happened. It's a very serious exercise. What is the truth in this case? The defendant himself has said that there's always two sides to every story. And of course there is. There's no such thing as a case, however guilty a man may be, where he can't advance at least some points on his own behalf for a jury's consideration. There are many points that have been advanced by him in this case. Some of them fair points. Some even, you may think, good points. If that is the case, the Crown begrudges none of them. But there are many other points that have been advanced. Of doubtful relevance, and of even more doubtful validity. And the Crown is entitled to begrudge those. In our submission, your function in this case is to decide what the truth of the matter was, according to the evidence that you've heard. And members of the jury, you do that according to the principles of law enunciated by the learned judge, and of course bearing in mind that it is for the prosecution to prove its case against this man. We say that no case could really be proved more conclusively against a man than this has. But it isn't enough to say that, members of the jury. One has to demonstrate it. There are three counts in this case, representing 3 days upon which the defendant is said to have received money. The 28th of October, the 31st of October, the 21st of November. Concentrate on the payments of money. That is what this case is all about. Are they proved by the prosecution? If so, what were those payments of money for? Of course, all of this happened a very long time ago. Of course, it makes it more difficult for people to remember what happened. But, members of the jury, merely because it happened a long time ago is not a matter that should deflect you from arriving at the truth in this case. What a game it would be, what a cynical game, if people could commit crime, be involved in police corruption, flee the country for so many years, and then come back and say, well, the case is now an old one. You shouldn't prosecute me. Let me off. The charges, members of the jury. Wouldn't it help for us to look at the charges in this way? There were 3 meetings between Perry and the defendant. We know that there were more. There were, in fact, at least 4. But there were 3 with which we are very closely concerned in this case. Those on the days of the charges. How did those meetings arise? What were those meetings all about? The prosecution submits to you, members of the jury, that the answers to those 2 questions will lead with certainty to the conclusion that those meetings were for corrupt purposes. Let's consider the first question. How did those meetings arise? Well, you know what the crown evidence on that is. Perry and Mr. Lloyd and Mr. Mountair, that these meetings were by arrangement and that they were meetings for corrupt purposes. The defendant says no. And when I say the defendant said it, this is what he said to you on Friday of last week and Monday of this week. No, the meeting on the 28th, the first one, was all a mistake, he said. He thought that he was meeting a chap called Terry, who was an informant, not Perry. And as regards the other two, the defendant said, well, I normally had lunch at the Grove, and I quote his words, surprise, surprise, by complete coincidence, I met Perry. Now, what do you make of that? Do you believe it? Can you begin to believe it? Because, members of the jury, if you find that that is untrue, there isn't a very strong foundation, is there, for the defendant's case that he advances, that he was not accepting corrupt payment. Let's consider the first one, 28, that he was going to meet, or believe that he was going to meet, Terry. You've heard the tape for yourselves. Would you have a look, please, at Exhibit 35D, members of the jury? Page 1, at the bottom of the page. Hello, it's Perry here. Remember me, do you? Who? Perry. Do you believe for a moment that he imagined that he was going to meet Terry? After all, members of the jury, this was a conversation of some little duration. Do you think that he didn't know who he was talking to? And then would you please go on, members of the jury, and look beyond that, in the same meeting, bottom of page 2. They're going to meet late. Yes, says Simmons, that's all right. About 10 o'clockish. All right, yes. So that they're going to meet at about 10 o'clock at the Rose. But we know that they didn't meet at 10 o'clock. We know that they met at 5:30. Why? Because Perry had telephoned to bring the meeting forward. So that it wasn't just one chat that the defendant had had with Perry. It was two. And do you still believe, after two telephone conversations, the second one to bring the meeting forward, that he still didn't know who he was going to meet that evening? Well, members of the jury, what happened at the meeting on the 28th, that afternoon? What did happen? We know that Mr. Perry got into the defendant's motor car. Never suggested that the defendant, to Perry, that the defendant thought that he was meeting the wrong person. And what are you doing here? I'm supposed to be meeting a man called Terry. I can't speak to you. I'm waiting to speak to somebody called Terry. This all came up for the very first time. I think it was last Friday. And members of the jury, you've only got to look at the transcript of what we have on tape to appreciate that the two men were on terms of some intimacy in relation to that which they were talking about. Sergeant Simons sort of seeing the customers, and that's where you get the money, see, on a nice little fraud. It doesn't matter how hard you work or how much you go out thieving, and how many people you fucking turn over, you still won't get as much intent. Is this the man who has arranged to meet a man called Terry and who is surprised to find that one of the likely lads has come into his motor car, as it were, almost by mistake? What about the three meetings as a whole, the 28th and the 31st and the 21st? Mr. Perry, Mr. Lloyd, and Mr. Mountford told you that these meetings were by appointment, in the sense that they knew when the meetings were going to take place. They had all the equipment set up. Perry was wider. They organised the men, took the numbers of the men, gave Perry the money back. The photographers were there. Hawkey was there. Miss Millard was there. Barry Owen was there on the first occasion. With all this, did all this happen by magic? On the off chance that Sergeant Simon might be taking his lunch at the Grove Public House that day? Or isn't it clearly the case, members of the jury, that these meetings were arranged, as Mr. Perry has told you that they were? Why would the defendant have you think otherwise? Why does he want you to think did meet by coincidence? Well, members of the jury, the answer may be this, you may think, that if these were pre-arranged meetings, there's got to be some reason for them. There's got to be some good reason at that with this man who is then on bail and who was suspected of being one of the likely lads. If they had met purely by chance, there's rather less explaining to do, is there not? And so that brings us to the next question, which is perhaps the vital question in the case. What were these meetings for? What were they all about? It was put to Mr. Perry, members of the jury, that the meetings may have been that the defendant wished to use Perry as an informant. That is one possibility. The only other possibility in this case is that the meetings were for corruption. And you may think there can be no doubt about it, members of the jury. Either the defendant met Perry because he wished to use him as an informant, or corruption was in the air. Now, let's consider which of those two it really was. But before that, members of the jury, may I just point to that which was said by the defendant in his statement from the dock on Friday and Monday. Because it was suggested to Perry, do you understand, that Perry was to be used as an informant. Let us consider what the defendant had to say about this. Do you know what he had to say about it, members of the jury? Nothing. There are four vital days in this case. The 24th of September, the 28th of October, the 31st of October and the 21st of November. There are four vital days in this case, and we have all spent weeks in this case considering what happened on those four vital days. As to the 24th of September, that's the time that Perry and the defendant met at the Camberwell police station in the cell. What did the defendant say about that in the statement from the document? Nothing. As to the 28th of October, this is what he said to me in his statement from the document. All I remember of that conversation is that Perry was talking to me in a friendly fashion about nothing in particular. Now I'm going to come to the 31st and the 21st, the dates that are the subject of counts 2 and 3. What did he say about those? Nothing. This is what he said, and these were the vital days in this case, about which, no doubt, if he was going to say anything from the dock, you'd have been anxiously listening. This is all he said. I met him many more times than has come out in the evidence. And that's all that you heard about the 31st of October and the 25th of October. And may I respectfully remind you, members of the jury, that you decide this case according to the evidence that you've heard. And the defendant, in his statement from the dock, chose to say nothing about those days. So, members of the jury, what is the position? What are you left with? Well, I'll tell you what you're left with, if I may. You're left with the evidence on the one side, and on the other side, you're left with a suggestion that was made to Perry that they were met for the purposes of the defendant getting information from him. And so I'm going to investigate that possibility with you now. There are three points that I wish to make about the suggestion to Perry that Perry was being used as an informant. And incidentally, members of the jury, against that, you remember this, that Perry said in his evidence, when this was put to him, no, they were meetings between a criminal and the corrupt police officer, the criminal being himself. The three points that I wish to make are as follows. First, in all of the transcripts that are before you, there isn't one single word that could possibly lead one to believe that the defendant was trying to get information out of Perry. Not one single question did the defendant ask of Perry which could have helped him in any way to obtain information. The second point that I make is this, and I'd ask you to look, please, at page 24 of exhibit number 35D. Top of the page, Mr. Simons, you see, the thing is, what you know, I don't mind helping out, but if there's a fucking grass amongst them, you see, I'm putting my, see what I've said, that Donald, you know, trying to get a Donald grasp them, because if he said he got collected up, then he's grasped them, and I start steaming in and fucking doing things, yeah, that's right, yeah. To get them all out, then he's just as likely to fucking grass me, isn't he? Yeah, but I can't see him doing that. So if I'm going to help out, it's got to be that McDonald. McDonald's anyway, knowing fuck all about it. I got you, yeah. He doesn't even want to fucking know he's had any help. Well, I'll find out who is the grass. And if he is the grass, then he can be seen to afterwards, can't he? Yeah, yeah. By the fellas. And so, members of the jury, the only reference to grassing, informing, in any of these transcripts, goes directly the other way. The defendant is making it crystal clear to Perry that he's not going to be involved with having anything to do with people who are grasses, because they can't be trusted. And isn't that interesting, members of the jury, against the background that the defendant says that there was criminal fantasy land? He can be seen to afterwards, can't he? Yeah, yeah. By the fellas. Criminal fantasy land. Indeed. And the third point, members of the jury, that I make about informants is this. Would you please pick up exhibit number 31, which is the diary? And there's no need for us to go through all of this, I assure you. Can we start in October? Because that's where all of this begins. Would you go to the 2nd of October, please? Thank you. 9:30 p.m. Do you have the 2nd of October? 9:30 p.m. Entered Walnut Castle Public House. Purchased refreshments for informants. Next day, members of the jury. 3rd of October, 9:30 p.m. To Rose Public House. Purchased refreshments for informants. Left Public House. Next day, the 4th of October, 9:20 p.m. To Walnut Castle Public House. Purchased refreshments for informants. Next day, the 5th of October, 9 p.m. To Tiger Public House. Purchased refreshments for informants. Left Public House. Next day, the 6th of October, 9:40 p.m. Hermit's Cave. Purchased refreshments for informants. Nothing in the next page, or the next, or I think the next. 10th of October, 9 p.m. To Walmer Castle. Purchased refreshments for informants. Then there's a weekly leave, members of the jury. Then he comes back on the 15th of October. 18th of October, if you please. 8:15 p.m. Purchased refreshments for informer while seeking information about local crime. October 25th, members of the jury. We're getting close to the day. 9:45 p.m. Entered Walmer Castle. Met informant for whom purchased refreshments. Next day, 26th of October, 9 p.m. Entered Walmer Castle. Met informant. Could we have this switched off, please? We leave out the 27th of October, members of the jury. 28th of October. Would you look at 5:15 p.m, please? That's the time, 5:30, that he met Perry. Not a word there, is there, about Perry being an informant. But just look at 8:30 that day, same day. To have a Haysbury Road, Reed Jackson and Reed, and whilst seeking information, entered Plough Public House and met informant for whom purchased refreshments. Makes reference that he's meeting an informant on that day at 8:30. No reference at all to the fact that he's meeting an informant at 5:30. Then we go on, members of the jury. November 3rd, 9 p.m. Of course, you'll appreciate, I say go on, but we've gone past the 31st of October, which is the second vital day in this case. If you look at 2:45 p.m. on that day, 2 p.m., 2:45 p.m., no reference to the fact that he's meeting an informant. Doesn't have to give the informant's name, just to say that it's an informant. That wasn't how he saw Perry at all, was it? 3rd of November. Artichoke Public House. Refreshments for informants. Then he takes some leave, members of the jury. And then if we can go on, please, to the 11th of November. 7 p.m. Met informant for whom purchased refreshments. 13th of November. 9 p.m. Met informant. 15th, 9:15, met informant. 16th, 9 p.m, met informant. 17th, 6:15, met informant. 19th, 9:30, met informant. 20th, the day before count 3, 10 p.m, met informant. 21st of November, count 3. 12:30 was the time of the meeting, members of the jury. Not a word about meeting an informant. And finally, may I tell you that on the last two pages, the 24th of November and the 25th, at 8 p.m. and 9 p.m, met informant. This man regularly made entries in his diary every time he met an informant that would see members of the jury, but lo and behold, insofar as his meeting with Perry were concerned, not a mention of the fact that he was considered to be an informant. Why not, if he was a genuine police informant who was there to give him, the defendant, information? We say to you, members of the jury, that you really need to have no doubt about this, but that there is very strong evidence indeed that Perry was not being treated as an informant by the defendant. And if he wasn't, then what on earth were those meetings all about? There's no excuse for them. There's no explanation for them. Well, the Crown say that we've now got to turn to the second alternative. That is corruption. The evidence, members of the jury, the direct evidence of that Perry and Lloyd and Mounter and Miss Millard, the evidence is all one way here. The tapes are obviously important evidence if you accept them, and it's not for me to say whether you should accept them. I shall advance arguments in due course. Arguments on which the prosecution based the view that you should. But in the end, it's for you to decide whether to accept those tapes or not. But if you do accept those tapes, members of the jury, why then, there's no question whatsoever in our submission that this was corruption. Shall we examine what the name of this game really was? And let's forget for a moment about counts numbers 1, 2, and 3. Would you pick up those tapes, those transcripts again, members of the jury, please? Page 6. This is tape number 2. This is the Robson matter and the Jelignat. Look at the top of page 6, and this is that...
35D, sir.
I'm sorry?
35D.
35D, page 6. This is Robson, the Robson-Jelignat matter, and this is the second... This is the very first meeting that was recorded, the date of count number 1. Top of the page. I'll see you about the other thing later on. Perry said that that was money. What else could it have meant? Let's go on. If you get anything like any problems, let me know, Steve, because it was only that yard of the jelly-like. It's what I'm worried about, yeah. It carries a bit of bird, don't it? If I can scrape up a few quid, if it comes to a few quid, I mean, I can scrape it up, yeah. I can borrow it, like. I mean, I can always borrow it, if it's right important, I mean, Mike. That's money, members of the jury. Money that's to be paid to a police officer for corrupt purposes. Can we please go on? Would you go on, please, to... Pages 26. In 27. This is the third meeting. The third meeting. Bottom of page 26. And we're talking, members of the jury, about Robson. And you remember all that business about don't go and meet him at the police station. We'll get... you'll be taken in if you did. That's not criminal fantasy land. That was good, solid advice that he was being given. Bottom of page 26. Perry, yeah, he's all right that way, but then he might. Is he? Yeah, I've given him money before, but he might this time. He might want a body or something. You know what I mean? But I don't particularly trust him now. This is the defendant talking about another police officer, members of the jury. That's another thing they do to you. You see, once they get in with you, they try to start using you as a grass. But once You see, like, for instance, supposing I was talking to you now, you know, sort of did a bit of business. All right, I might reckon you now, but as soon as you started puffing, I might say to you, if I was a keen bloke, I might say, here, who did so-and-so and so? And if you tell me, I wouldn't think fuck all of you after that. That goes straight to the heart of the question as to whether the defendant ever even considered using Perry as an informant. He's telling him, I wouldn't think tuppence of you if you gave me information. No, they've tried that already on you. Because if you're a grass, you're a fucking grass. And if you're a grass, that means you're likely, just as likely to fucking grasp me as any kind. See what I mean? Perry. Yeah, like, the minute he, the first time they put the jelly on me, you see, and he was trying to get the names off me that way, you see, I wouldn't give him no names. So we done it money-wise, like, yeah. And if he wants, and then just look at this now, to the jelly. Well, what could he want you for? If you've done your business, there's nothing owing, is there? No, he's had his full wedge. He's got nothing on you. I wouldn't fucking see the cunt, quite honestly. Like, if, say, if you owed him money, see, and he said, oh, well, he's got to meet you, then of course you've got to go, and that's it. Yeah, yeah, because otherwise you'll think you're fucking him up about the money, and he'll fit you up. But you've done the business and you just want to drop the man out of it, because what he's doing, he might try to bleed you. He might think, oh, this, you know, I'm onto a good one here, and because we've got more villains in our game than you've got in yours. And then, members of the jury, the very next paragraph of the defendant's talk, there's reference again to him bleeding him dry. And all the time they're talking about Perry paying money to Robson. And I know that I've emphasized the word money, but you understand this is my chance to draw to your attention just what the name of the game really was between these two men. All the time the defendant and Perry here are talking about money, money going to police for corrupt purposes. And members of the jury, just go over the page, please, to the bottom of page 29, sorry. But then again, that's all right, but then again, he might also have half-heard something about you and sort of try and bring it round and say, we know all about this, that and the other, conning you, you know. Then sort of con dough out of you, you know. But he doesn't really know fuck all at all, really. He's only half-heard you've done something. Yeah. You've got to watch all this, because otherwise you'll be fucking skinned all your life, you know. Send a mate up to see Robson, and if he says to the mate, you know, the other thing is, don't let the mate show out to Robson that he knows you paid him dough or anything, you see, because then Robson will think, well, if he's fucking told this bloke, he's told every cunt, you know, and he won't deal with you anymore. No, no, he don't know, none of the others know. But as I say, if you paid all your dough, all it can be is a tip-off. It's either a tip-off about something else, or he's going to try and blab you for some more money because Christmas is coming. And then over the page, members of the jury. Third line down, but he's not on your back, is he? No, not really. You've finished the business. Now, members of the jury, this was the situation here, you know, that there was a great deal of chat about Robson and the money that Perry was having to pay to Robson. Robson being a police officer and money being paid for corrupt purposes. What did the defendant do about it? He advised Perry on his own behalf. He didn't, did he, members of the jury, act the hero, if I can use the defendant's own expression, and say to Perry, my goodness me, what on earth's going on here? You tell me about it, I'll investigate it. Do you remember how the defendant criticised the Nuneaton officers because they hadn't immediately cautioned Perry when he offered them a bribe and said, I'll give you some money to get out of here. Why didn't you caution him? Criminal offence was being committed. This was the defendant's chance, members of the jury, to show his true mettle when he was told over and over and over again that a fellow police officer was receiving corrupt payments. Not a word like this. It was all to this end, wasn't it? Well, I hope you do your business and finish your business with him as soon as possible, and then we can get down to our business in earnest. Why didn't the defendant do something about this situation? It was left to the Times reporters to do something about the situation. Why didn't the defendant, the serving police officer, do something about the situation? Well, the answer to that, member of the jury, unhappily, again, is to be found in the words of Mr. Simons himself. I'm in a little firm within a firm. And I've just pointed out to you the passages where Perry is telling the defendant about the jelly night and Robson and the money. Can I remind you, members of the jury, of what the defendant told the police when he was interviewed? Here's what he was asked, and it's the bottom of page 337. Did Perry tell you, he was asked, that Inspector Robson had planted jelly, meaning jelly night, on him? No. Did Perry tell you that he was prepared to pay money to Inspector Robson to avoid prosecution for possessing the jelly night? Defendant's answer, no. Well, he did. It's all there. Why was he telling those untruths to the police? And so, members of the jury, you can look outside the immediate facts of this case to see what the name of the game was. It's all there in all of those references to Jelignac and Robson and Perry paying Robson money. In relation, members of the jury, to the instant case, however, as you know, there are a number of passages upon which the prosecution rely. In cross-examination, this is what Perry said to the defendant. And this was with reference to tape number one, members of the jury, and you remember that, do you not? It's on page number two. I'd like to see you about you know. Yeah, where are you now? The defendant put it to Perry that they could have been talking about information. He didn't then put it to him that he believed that it was somebody else called Perry, but he put it to him that they could have been talking about information. What was Perry's answer? Do you remember? We both knew what we were talking about. Could this sentence have applied to information, asked the defendant. Not coming from me, it couldn't, said Perry. We both knew what we were talking about. And when you listen to the tape, do you not hear with your own ears the sound of recognition in the defendant when Perry says, I'd like to see you about her, you know. Take five, members of the jury, page seven. Top of the page. How are you doing, Mickey? You know, a bit more dead, I see. Page 15. about a third of the way down. I still ain't got it all yet. I got another 50, all right. Yeah, fine, yeah. Page 90. And this is the money between Perry and the defendant. Bottom of the page. Do all right then, Mick. Get anything you want. You know, keep in touch. I'll get it. I'm going to definitely get it next week, but I couldn't get my hands on it. Yes, that's all right. As I say, don't do anything silly. Just sort of, you know. Take 14, page 22. Top of the page. How are you doing, Mickey? All right there, eh? Actually, I've only got 50. All right. Pardon? I've only got 50 again. All right. Yeah. Some of your mates are in trouble, aren't they? And you'll notice, or have you noticed, members of the jury, that every time the subject of money does crop up between them, the way the voice drops and the way the conversation hurries on to something else, just as you'd expect it to be if you, a corrupt police officer, was sitting in the car and taking fivers or tens from some men chief crook. Page 24, bottom of the page. If you've written something in, members of the jury, so be it, but you'll remember the evidence about that from both Perry and from Mr. Penner and Mr. Ealy, reference to man. I'm sorry to say that I may have to return to these particular references in due course. Page 30, bottom of the page. I only got the sessions, one coming up, that's all, but I don't know when I'll get the money. It could be this week, like, but no, it's a bit late this week now, not this week now. But that other cunt on my map from the yard, I can't do fuck all. No, what Robson? And then they go on to the business of Robson now. Page 36. Bottom of the page. Something for which no explanation has ever been advanced in this case. Anyway, Nick, thanks very much for that. You know, so it goes on. And look, members of the jury, if you like, at page 13. This is the last reference that I'm going to give you on the transcripts, just for the time being. Rather interesting, ironical, little bit of conversation that comes in the middle of the page, on page 13. The thing to do, you see, is if once you sort of got yourself all square, and that, fucking working with us, you know, yeah. But I know, I can't give you you haven't got this thing bugged or something, have you? So I talk in a false voice, talk with a Scotch accent, and you'll probably remember that little bit of laughter for a long time. He wouldn't be saying that, would he, members of the jury, if they were talking about information that Perry was giving him. You haven't got this thing bugged, have you? Just an interesting little vignette. This is corruption. And that was what was in the defendant's mind. And there are so many references to men in these tapes, notes of the jury, that it could only conceivably have been corruption that those two men were on about. Well, the defendant seeks, does he not, and did so, and you probably remember it, in his cross-examination of the witnesses, to shrug it all off and to pour scorn on these tapes and to brush them aside, the whole lot aside, with that expression, it's all criminal fantasy then. That's what he says. But you know, members of the jury, it's interesting to consider whether it really was all criminal fantasy land. Some of it may have been very silly talk. Some of it may have been insincere on the defendant's part. Maybe that he had no intentions whatsoever of going out with Perry and committing crime. But you just think about it. Do you remember Mr. Harley giving evidence yesterday? That one of the things that they were concerned about was that these knifey lads were changing addresses and they couldn't keep track on them. Do you remember that? Well, let's consider, shall we, what the position was there. If you'd look, please, at page 31 of the transcript, and page 32. Bottom of page 31. Yeah, I got nicked the last time, Emma. As soon as everyone knows where you're living, you might just as well fucking pack it all in. There, you know, because, and the other thing, like, when you went to Nunhead Lane, I tell you now, you sort of showed out straight away that you were there. And what a business it was, wasn't it, members of the jury? That police officers were desperately, it would seem, trying to keep track on the likely lads, find out where they were living, where they were stashing their gear, if I can be permitted to use that expression, and the defendants giving Perry the advice that he's all too conspicuous, that it's no good when the police know where he's living, and that the best thing to do is to stash away the stolen gear in some lock-up garage or another. You may think, members of the jury, that the one bit of advice that an honest police officer might have been inclined to give is, stay where you are. Don't worry, stay where you are. Tricking Perry into believing that he's all right where he is, but knowing in his own mind that at least the police can keep track of him where he is. And all that business about committing offences out of town, that sound to you like criminal fantasy learning? There may be one or two little bits in this lot that were in fact and in truth criminal fantasy land. But the vast majority of it, members of the jury, made good, sound, practical, common sense. This is what Mr. Perry said in evidence when he was asked about this, and whether all this was criminal fantasy land. We just started having dealings with each other. You were just telling me what sort of things we could do, hoping to get further money out of me later on. And Perry, you may think, hit the nail on the head when he said that, being not members of the jury.